Hello everyone, it is time for Talks About Tech Weekly. This is episode number 36 today, recorded on the 22nd of July 2012. I'm your host, Michael McAndrew, and as always,
I am the co-host.
Yes.
Kevin McAndrew.
Yes, Kevin, how are you doing?
I am very good today, thank you, Michael.
That's very good. So you're going to be heading off to Florida next week, right? Next Friday?
Yes, next Friday.
So you won't be here for the show?
No, unfortunately.
And Dara, you're going to America as well, right?
Yeah, I'm going to America on Thursday.
Right. So, as always, thank you, Kevin. As always, Kevin goes to America. No. We have Dara Coughlin here. I forgot to introduce you.
Our guest. Hello.
Our guest for today's show. How are you, Dara?
I am good, and I'm seeing my handsome face in the live stream.
Yes, you are. Dara Coughlin is a great friend of me and Kevin's, and he is a tech... What would you say? Yeah, a tech enthusiast.
A tech cruncher.
Yeah,
so... I eat tech every day.
Yeah, so thank you, Dara, for coming on the show. And I know you've been supporting us right from the get-go in the chat room, as unrooted in the chat room. So thank you very much.
I don't actually have the RSC up.
I don't think there's anyone in there. right, so we better get started by talking about EPEAT. Mm-hmm. And EPEAT is basically an environmental rating that was actually introduced by Apple. And all of the Apple range, except for the iPhone and the iPad, were part of this EPEAT standard, right? So EPEAT, the iPhone and the iPad were not part of the standard because they were designed to be thin. So all the parts were glued, and it was very hard to recycle them, right? So Apple pulled out of this EPEAT just a few weeks ago, and now they're back in it. And they put up a little letter on their website, and it's titled "A Letter from Bob Mansfield, the Senior Vice President of Hardware Engineering in Apple." And he says, "We've recently heard from many loyal Apple customers who are disappointed to learn that we have removed our products from EPEAT rating system. I recognize that this was a mistake. Starting today, all eligible Apple products are back on EPEAT." Now, they say eligible products, right?
So
everyone was thinking they left the EPEAT environmental rating because the MacBook Pro... The new MacBook Pro or Retina was not eligible.
Yeah, because you can't really you can't even upgrade it to better RAM or anything like that.
So. Yeah. You're stuck with the machine you get from the get-go.
Yeah, right. So that was...
Which is a bad thing for me because this thing is very bad amount of RAM in it that I'm using.
Yeah.
It's only got 4 gigs. I need 8.
And you see, the problem is... The reason the iPhone, the iPad, and probably the new MacBook Pro Retina, they are probably recyclable. Except the problem is dismantling those parts and separating them, because they're glued, you have to have special tools to do that.
And it costs a lot more with labor and also with buying these tools to take them apart,
Yeah, so it's actually a very, very long letter. You can read it yourself. Go to apple.com/environment/letter. -2 customers, and you'll be able to see the letter from Bob Mansfield. It's a very long letter. I just read the first paragraph of that, and he basically goes on to say that I'll just read a bit here. For example, Apple led the industry in removing harmful toxins such as brominated flame, whatever things.
Flame?
Yeah.
You mean that my MacBook Pro could burst into flames any minute?
We are the only company to comprehensively report greenhouse gas emissions. Basically, he goes on to say how great Apple is, as always. I mean, the thing with Apple is they never like to admit that they're wrong to something.
Yeah.
You know, and...
It's very Steve Jobsy.
Yeah, but they, as a company, they feel weak if they're saying, sorry, we were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sign of weakness to them, mm-hmm. right? Whereas to me, if I say sorry, it's just...
To admit you're wrong.
Yeah, to actually take the fact that you were wrong.
Yeah.
Right? And stand corrected.
But again, these are...
Nobody's perfect. Nobody's perfect. Yeah. We all make mistakes.
These guys are global... They're a huge global company. Like, huge global company. So I guess they'd be thinking that maybe it would take away from their reputation, you know,
mm-hmm.
as a company. They'd be like, oh, we made a mistake. We're very sorry. But instead, you know, like, if they didn't say that, then their reputation could be better, you know.
Yeah, it's not Apple style to...
No.
Mm. Especially even the letter that they wrote here is not Apple style. They wouldn't, if it was Steve Jobs, he wouldn't write a letter like this.
Mm-hmm.
He would basically give a 5-liner. We were screwed. Other people were crap. It wasn't my fault.
No. What he would do, in my opinion, what he would do is he would just put all the eligible products back on the market. He wouldn't say a word about it.
Yeah.
That's it. But so
what's very interesting is that they pulled out of EPEAT just as the new MacBook Pro came out.
Mm-hmm.
So like now they have the iPhone, the iPad, and the new MacBook Pro that aren't eligible for EPEAT. Right. So
They're probably going to try and improve the EPEAT certification.
Yeah.
You know, and work to get the iPhone mm-hmm. and the iPad and the MacBook Pro or Retina
mm-hmm.
Back on there.
Especially
I don't understand, though, why they really just didn't put any EPEAT in the first place. I would put EPEAT above everything. Just have it all stuff. Because we're eventually all... Global warming will eventually have a bad impact. It's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
But again, I guess they do want to keep their customers, because why would they be bringing EPEAT back in if they pulled out of it? And it's obviously because the customers were... complaining, and they're like, oh, well, you came out of EPEAT. Why? And
well,
all this, so.
I personally didn't even know the EPEAT certification existed before this. They always say that, you know, it's certified for lots of different ratings and things like that, but I didn't actually realize, you know, that the EPEAT certification existed as such.
Yeah.
But obviously, people were pretty upset. All right, we have to move on. We're going to talk a bit about Digg. So Digg is an online website where, you know, you might have seen on certain websites, Digg the story or something like that.
Yeah.
It's the button, right? And if you like the story, you can dig it. And it was actually a very, very successful website, started in 2004 by Kevin Rose, who he's been... a very, very famous entrepreneur. He is a very young man, and he has made a lot of money so far in his day. He was one of the founders of Revision 3. Dara, I'm sure you listen to Revision 3 shows, do you?
Yep, I'm sure. The reason why... Oh, God. My phone just died.
Anyway,
no, seriously, the time is 8 minutes behind. It's frozen and it's been happening all day.
Can get annoying. So
got the battery reboot.
Do you have an ad on there, Dara?
No, I think that was me.
Okay, yeah,
I did have an ad, but I have headphones,
so yeah, okay, that's fine.
Right, so Digg got sold for They said allegedly for $500,000 to a company called BetaWorks.
Mm-hmm.
And
BetaWorks.
Yeah. But Matt Williams, the CEO of Digg, said that the deal was actually more than $500,000 because, you know, the stock. They were selling the stock off as well. So the deal was a lot more than $500,000. Mm-hmm. But he wouldn't actually say how much it was sold for yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, you would think that Digg would be sold for much more than $500,000 because, like, you know, how successful
it was. In 2006, Google offered Digg $200,000.
Mm-hmm.
Not even $200,000, but $200 million, I should say, for Digg, right, back in 2006. Dig was a very, very successful site, and it still is, but they just couldn't make revenue on it,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm. And well, it's I'm not too into Dig, and like I'm just exploring the site now, and I'm not sure what it exactly is.
Yeah, you see, the thing is, for the younger generation like me, you, and Kevin right here, we wouldn't have really been introduced to it because it was kind of something before our time on the internet.
Yeah.
Right? Because I wasn't part of
Dig. Yeah, I was only 5 when it was
Yeah, exactly.
Out.
So obviously we weren't going to be part. And plus, it was aimed more towards the older generation, not children as such, right? So
yeah.
Kevin Rose actually got out of this in 2011. March 2011, he resigned from his role in Dig. He got out of there because he knew it was going to go down. And it was going down the drain, and now he's actually gone on to some other sites and different things that he's working on. And just to give you a bit of background on BetaWorks, they're a New York-based startup incubator even, and they said that what they were going to. So you're probably wondering what they're going to do with Dig. They're going to fold Dig into the news.me website. And they also said that they're going to turn Dig back into a startup, which is interesting. So a low-budget, small team startup.
Mm-hmm.
And that extract
there is...
Well,
that's what all things should be.
Yeah.
I love startups.
Yeah, because it's low-budget. It's like what we're doing right here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've got the small studio, I've got myself, I've got Ken, I got you in here. You know, easy to run.
That's a 3-person team, like,
mm-hmm.
and you're doing pretty well.
Yeah, and it's not even profit. All the profit that's made, it's just put back into the studio.
Right.
Know?
Yeah. We're not allowed.
So you're not actually spending any of it on personal.
No.
So, what are your opinions on Dig getting sold? Does it upset you in any way, Dara? You obviously weren't. You didn't use Dig.
Yeah, I haven't used Dig, but I'm just curious to see what it is. Like, the site itself, it looks very Web 3.0, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, like,
or
Dig...
Or not Web 3.0, HTML 3.0, sorry.
Dig sounds sounds very interesting, but you know how...
It's like a news something.
Yeah,
because,
like, now that
it's
being...
Whatever.
Now that it's being actually bought and changed into something else, you know, now we won't really be able to see what Dig was, and we might have come across it. Like, I had never really used YouTube, but now I use it all the time. And if YouTube had been completely changed, I couldn't have, like, seen it. But, yeah.
It has changed. It's changed now to kind of Google Plus style.
And Dig got taken over by Reddit. Right, Reddit is pretty much the same thing as Dig. Are very similar, right? So these new generations of forums, kind of like Reddit and things like that, they just took over.
I was thinking, because I've used Reddit before. I've used Reddit before, but only for like Minecraft and just very underground things.
Yeah, well, like, what if you're just wondering what Reddit is,
mm-hmm. Yeah, explain what
is basically, if you have, you're on the internet, and you see a really interesting story on a website, and then you say, okay, I want to put this so everyone can see it. So you copy the URL, and you come over to Reddit, and you add the URL, and you put a nice title on it, and then people can go and they can click on the title, and they click on the title and they have a look around the site, so that it doesn't actually... It's not. It actually brings you to the URL,
mm-hmm.
and what it's actually great for that I found is if you have something that you found very interesting, or if you think you did something very well, you can
I ordered a BLT with cheese.
You can actually take the URL, put it up on Reddit, and then people can come and they can see the URL. And they can click on and go to your website, mm-hmm. or whatever.
So. Yeah, so you use Reddit now.
Oh, yeah.
To, you know...
Advertise different things, you know.
Yeah, get Space News Today out there. Mm-hmm. We'll talk a bit about that at the end of the show.
Yeah.
One of the top stories here is I've ordered a BLT with cheese.
Okay.
What's that on?
Reddit, is it?
It's on Reddit, yeah. But
yeah.
When I... Just don't visit it. It's a bit vulgar.
Right. Thank you, Dara. breaking news. BLT with cheese.
Breaking news. I ordered a BLT.
With cheese. So, we might as well move on anyway, right? Mm-hmm. To talk a bit about how Washington State is using Facebook to vote in the upcoming U.S. election.
Now, when I saw this, I was saying to myself, well, it is understandable because, you know, you saw Obama. He was actually doing a Google Plus Hangout. And I found that very interesting.
I like that.
You know, but I'm not very surprised that they would be using Facebook to vote. Apart from that, it might be...
So, let me explain to you a bit about how they're doing this. Mm-hmm. The voters will be able to use a Facebook app, right? So, if you have a Facebook account, you know they have different apps. And you'll be able to use this app. It's actually developed by Microsoft, interestingly enough. And you'll be able to register and vote through that application. And the users, if you had a name like Madman1234, you wouldn't be able to vote. Yeah. You have to have an authentic Facebook name, right? And you also have to have an ID to be able to vote and register and things like that. Now, Kevin, if there was a new election in Ireland...
Yeah.
For a new Taoiseach and whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Would you, and this Facebook thing was available, and let's say you did have a Facebook account.
Yeah.
Would you vote through Facebook?
Now, that's interesting. I would not vote through Facebook because if I was to vote, I prefer my vote to be private.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's going up into the internet and all that, and if, you know, some... hacker comes along or something like that, then, you know, it wouldn't be as secure as actually going to a place and putting in your vote, like writing it down, putting in your vote.
So, Dara, would you, if you had a Facebook account and there was an election on and you had the choice of voting through Facebook or going to a place to vote, would you vote through Facebook?
I would not vote through Facebook. Facebook, because I just don't want other people reading my vote, because votes are meant to be private.
Yeah,
I know it's a new age of publicness with all the social networks out there, but still, I don't want other people looking at my vote and say, "Oh, he's such an idiot. He voted for Mitt Romney."
Yeah, like the thing is, your vote is something that is very personal. And Facebook is something that is a very, very much public service.
Mm-hmm.
And even if your vote is kept private, one of the reasons that I'm not on Facebook is because of privacy issues.
Mm-hmm. If you put... Now, Facebook, it could be dangerous, but it's only dangerous if you put personal information up. And to vote, you have to put personal information up, you know. So you have to actually put up all that stuff, and that could all be taken.
Mm-hmm.
So
definitely.
You have to be very careful about that. But it's interesting because you know how, you know, the U.S. government in Washington, they have actually allowed this, okay? And what they must be trying to do, well, this is what I think, is trying to get people to vote.
Yeah, more people to vote, right.
Because mightn't have enough time.
They have, and they have this option where first-time voters can register through Facebook.
And it might be even easier to do it.
I think they're trying to reach out to the younger generation with this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, as well.
Well...
Because the majority of people who would use Facebook would probably be the younger generation. Mm-hmm. They'd be on it, like, every single day.
Yeah, and a lot of people use the apps almost every single day, as well as the Facebook.
Dara, what's your opinion on this?
Well, do you mean younger generation by... Because you can vote when you're 18.
Yes, that's what I mean.
But
yes. You
can go on Facebook when you're 13. So do you
mean
younger generation over 18 or younger generation between 13?
Targeting 18-year-olds. I mean, in the US, you have a big issue with... I mean, the majority of the population probably wouldn't vote.
Mm-hmm. And
they've come up with some schemes in the past, like I voted stickers, and if you can get them for social networks now,
it's a big deal over in America, especially.
Yeah, my brother's 19 in October, and he still isn't registered to vote yet.
Yeah, and
I guess it is your decision as well.
Yeah,
if you want to.
Oh yes, yes, but they're trying to get across the importance of voting, and they're trying to target the younger generation, right? Because they'd be on Facebook.
Yeah, but no one should make it easier for them to vote, though. You shouldn't be.
No.
You shouldn't be forced.
Yeah,
just to go.
They're just
vote
giving
this
you
or else.
Yeah,
you.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're giving you the option, though, right? So
at least they're giving you the option.
Yeah. So anyway, there you go. Mm-hmm. Now some interesting Yahoo news.
Your monitor does some visualizer.
So Yahoo has gone through quite a lot of CEOs recently. 5 CEOs in a year.
Yeah.
Kind of feel a bit bad for
Yahoo.
For Yahoo.
Okay.
Yahoo and Bamer are in the same boat, I think.
I'm going to become Yahoo's next CEO. Which probably, well, hopefully won't be too soon. And I'm going to try and get them, into a better state. Because at the moment they aren't, doing as well as they used to be doing,
Right. And so Yahoo is actually a very, very interesting story.
Yeah.
In January 1994, by the way, I'm getting this from the Wikipedia page. Yang and David, Philo, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. They were electrical engineer graduate students from Stanford University. And they created a website called Jerry's Guide to the World Wide Web.
Okay.
And that is, it's kind of interesting, right? So it was renamed Yahoo.
Mm-hmm.
Then, in 1995, January 18th, 1995. So I find that quite interesting.
So this is in 1995, sorry.
Right? So this is a long, long time ago.
Mm.
And
well, Google was 98, 99. So they're an older company than Yahoo. Or than Google. Maybe Google will drop off in another 5 years? Don't know.
Mm. Maybe.
But they're doing so well.
Right, so, and Yahoo was very, very, very successful during the 90s.
Yeah.
It was absolutely, very, very successful. And then it just started to go down the drain. The amount of Yahoo, I think, yeah, that's the problem.
They axed so many.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure which ones they're running.
Right, so maybe they just bit off more than they could chew with all these services that they were providing. And even the ones that are still active services, there are loads. I mean, you would be listing them for ages.
Mm.
So maybe that's what happened to them. They were very successful as a search engine. And then Google came along and it kind of all changed.
Mm. Yeah, sandblasted them face, basically.
Yeah, but to this day, Yahoo have more email accounts than Google. More people have signed up for Yahoo Mail than Gmail. Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting.
A lot of my relations have Yahoo mail addresses.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess it's...
And they probably wouldn't use them. It's back from the day when Yahoo Mail was...
Yeah, it's kind of like
popular.
MSN. People still have MSN accounts.
Yeah.
And it's not
even
around.
We still have the Messenger application on this computer, and hasn't been opened, let me check, since 2009.
Yeah. So people still have things that were popular back then, but they, they don't use it as much anymore.
Right. Mm. So in 2000, Yahoo started using the Google for search results, right? So now they're actually using Google. And over the next 4 years, it developed its own search engine technologies, which began in 2004. Yahoo were also revamped its mail service to compete with Google's Gmail in 2007. Yeah. And the company struggled through 2008 with several large layoffs. Now, interestingly, in February of 2008, Microsoft made a bid to acquire Yahoo for $44.6 billion.
Wow.
US dollars. Yeah.
That is a lot.
A pretty big bid. And Yahoo rejected, claiming that it substantially overvalues Yahoo and was not in the interest of its shareholders.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess people who own Yahoo, they want to keep Yahoo where it is, you know, because they set up Yahoo and then they have Yahoo for about 15, 17 years. Or, no, wait, was it in 2008, is it?
Yeah.
13 years. And could you imagine just selling it off to Microsoft?
Mm.
You know.
Ooh. Yeah. So, nasty. They'll probably do what they did with Skype.
And...
because every single company that Microsoft has bought has kind of not done very well.
Mm. Yeah. So they went through...
Well, not done very well, just...
They're popular,
but they're services that people have to use. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Anyway, yeah.
So the Yahoo story, anyway, is quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Carol Bartz came on the scene, replaced the co-founder, Jerry Yang, in January 2009 as CEO. And she was actually removed from her position, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Tim Morse was named the interim CEO of the company until Scott Thompson,
oh my God,
in early 2012 was appointed the new CEO. And then there was an issue with that because of his resume. That was a recent story.
Oh, yes.
He put in false information in his resume, which is not a good thing to do. So Yahoo haven't had very a very good history. I mean, they started off well, but in recent times it's been quite bad. So
maybe they pandered a CEO switcher. One that automatically switches the CEOs.
Yeah.
I mean, they've gone through so many CEOs now.
Mm.
So they've brought on a new CEO, Marissa Meyer.
Now, hopefully she actually lasts much longer than the other CEOs.
Right, and they've been trying to do that. And there's something very interesting in her contract. But I'll just give some background about her. She was Google's 20th employee, which is good. And she was an engineer for Google, which is good.
Mm.
And so as part of her deal anyway, for this new CEO job, it's a $1 million salary a year, which is nice. But for such a high-profile company, you'd expect that kind of money anyway.
Yeah.
And also... an extra $30 million bonus if she stays for 5 years.
Seriously?
So they want her to stay.
5 years.
Just please stay.
Now, this is the first time...
we don't want you to leave.
Yeah, this is the first time she has been the CEO of a company.
Mm.
So it's a lot of money to shell out for a first-time CEO. So she hasn't had much of experience as a CEO.
Mm-hmm.
But... I mean, everyone is saying that she can do some amazing things with Yahoo.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not going to be easy to turn it around for them because of all the jobs they've laid off, all the services and products that they've just axed. And it's going to be tricky.
Mm-hmm.
And also, she's pregnant. She's expecting a child in October, right?
Oh.
Yeah. So she's going to be going... tougher. She's going on maternity leave. So it's very... I mean, she's a multimillionaire. She'd never have to work again.
Mm-hmm.
And yet she's taking up this job. So, a courageous move on her part.
Yeah, and she's pregnant as well, which is crazy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens.
Yeah.
So be interesting. So we're going to move on. We're going to talk about Google Maps and Google Street View.
Yes.
Going to Antarctica.
Google Street View is incredible. They've been like all over the world. I think they have almost everywhere in the world. Except for Antarctica, obviously.
Right. So
who wants to map on... Well, I understand why people want to have an overhead map of Antarctica, but a Street View map.
Well,
really?
Yeah, it would actually be pretty cool. Points. See all the polar bears and... Oh, wait, there's no polar bears. But penguins.
There's no streets. There's no streets.
Yeah, well, I'll bring it up. I'll bring
streets,
it up.
So what's the point of Street View? You ice view.
Ice view.
Go underwater now.
Google ice view.
Yeah, well, there are actually roads and stations. It's weird. They have, like, factories there and different things like that. It's interesting what you'd actually find in Antarctica. But you see, the thing is about Antarctica, it's so vast and so massive. It's absolutely huge. And you see, like, trying to map Antarctica would be pretty hard. But you see, there actually are a lot of, like, it's not just a barren wasteland.
Right.
Because there are actually more things that you wouldn't notice would be there. So they do have, like, harbours and ports and different things for importing different stuff in there. Because loads of people live there. And they like, a lot of people, mostly what people do actually over there is they research the penguins. And they're trying to keep the penguins safe, because especially with global warming, you know. But it's weird, because on Google Maps, they had to send another satellite up and get another picture of Antarctica because of global warming. Like, a whole section had been taken off. So if another section gets taken off of Antarctica, could you imagine they'd have to do a whole new street view on it, you know?
Yeah. Ooh. So it's more like images.
Yeah.
Rather than a street view as such. But very nice. It's very, very nice. So, mm-hmm. You know, you just love, I mean, seeing the penguins. They have street view images of penguins.
Wow.
Glaciers. And exploration sites, like on the South Pole, they have all the flags.
Yeah.
And that's
amazing. I still don't see the need for it.
Well, come on. There was never a need for Street View. I mean, when have you ever used Street View for a practical purpose? I mean, apart from just wanting to see where you're going. I mean, maps, yes, because you can see. But, I mean, Street View, I've never used it practically.
No. Well, you could use it to see, like, what you're going to be seeing.
Right. You so, know. Dara, how have you used it practically?
That's the point. You use it to see, say, if you have a map. Some people are just very, they can't see. If you look on Google Maps in my house, okay, I probably won't pull that up, but then even though if you're on the road, you take a right turn, but on the map, it looks like you're taking a left turn. So you have to make sure that you're actually taking a right turn.
Mm. Yeah, good point. Yeah, but I've never really used it anyway, personally.
Yeah, neither have I. Like, I've used it just to, like, look at places.
See people falling off their bikes.
Just as a novelty. Right. And right. Stuff like that.
Yeah. I've seen your house.
No, don't put it up. Don't put it up. Don't put it up. No.
I'm not.
But it's
I've
funny.
I've just. You see, now that you said it, it gives me an idea. I won't do it.
But it's funny because when you look in Street View, you see in the houses like all these faces and stuff. And in Antarctica, I wonder if there's people, would they have to blur out, will they blur out their faces?
Yeah.
Or if there's certain places that some people don't want people to see, you know, would they have to blur them out?
Oh, yeah.
Germany.
You know, it would be hard, you know.
Right, yeah.
Remember when Germany were protesting against Street View? Like, they caused a massive fuss against it. They're just...
Like, yeah, well, I mean, there is. I know where they're coming from with the privacy breach. I mean, your face coming up on Google Street View. I wouldn't like that.
It'd be very hard to get all those faces. Could you imagine?
Exactly.
Just fuzzing them all out.
But like, they didn't want public. They didn't want streets there. Streets are public places. So therefore, you're blocking a public place. You're making a public place private. So that doesn't make any sense.
There are homes there as well.
The thing is, but you're making a place that is public to people who are there, public to
the world.
The world, right? So anyone who looks at that street, they could be on their computer and they'd be able to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Whereas when you're on, it takes a while to get to the street and whatever. I mean, you're opening up that street to a lot more people.
Mm-hmm. But it's funny because I was looking at a place and there was a fire truck right outside a house. And there was actually quite a few people around it, but all those faces were blurred and then you could see this big face of the fireman in the back of the fire truck, sitting on the back, and he looked like he was part of it. But you could see his face, and he was looking right at the camera, eating his lunch.
Mm.
And you could zoom in, and you could see perfectly his face.
Yeah.
You know.
And he could
I wonder what he was eating.
Yeah,
find out what he bought that day, and you could trace the receipt. And you could find
them. Okay, well, maybe not half bar, but
that'll be for the very you find crazed his credit card serial number. Killer and stalker.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, it's great that they've pretty much conquered the world with Stream View.
Yeah.
It's a bit freaky.
But at the same time. That's another reason how Google can be God.
And how they can be scary as
well. They recently introduced, they're going to do Street View inside. So if you're going to a restaurant and you want to see what the restaurant is like.
More problems.
You can go inside and take a look at that.
And you're going to have to get
that reverts back to what you said about using Street View for a practical purpose. Because who wants to use, would we call Room View?
You can
Street View is
you can't
a bit,
exactly have a street inside right. a house.
And anyway. The fact that it should be like Antarctic view maybe for Antarctica streets in Antarctica.
The polar view.
But like
the melting view, the water view. The water view. Oh, that's actually a nice one.
Yeah, Kevin.
But that's going to cause so many problems. Can you imagine? You're going to have to get permission to go in there. It's going to have to be closed down, like shut down. And when you go in there...
Yeah, you do it at night.
You know, there has to be an owner there. So that's going to be even more hassle, you know.
Right.
So, like, if they go into a restaurant and they say,
there's definitely going to be some issue there, you're right.
Can we take a few pictures or whatever? And then they're like, sorry, no, it's private. You know, and
good point.
Next one,
good point. They've already done this.
I definitely see an issue there because buildings are private places. No one wants to take a picture of your bedroom.
Even
well, my bedroom is being broadcast to the public right now. But who really wants to see your bedroom? No one.
It's like a restaurant, so it's like a public indoor place. So it might be a shopping center or something like that.
You were saying,
shopping centers, that makes sense.
Yeah, you were saying in San Francisco they have this.
In some restaurants in San Francisco in the big cities now.
Oh well, yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yes, it is. So, Microsoft Office, the new version of Microsoft Office has been announced and a preview has been released.
Yay.
Fun. And I happen to have downloaded it onto my Windows 8.
Do you think it
is good? Virtual machine. Well, I'll give you a bit of an overview of it, first of all.
Okay.
So, here's my Windows 8 display screen thingy. And you can move around the tiles. I just installed the virtual machine. I used to have a virtual machine on here. It's actually not as slow as it looks. It's just my screen grabber is a bit slow. So, first of all, I'll talk a bit about what kind of new features you have on this new version of Office. First of all, the new look. They have a brand new look. It's kind of a Metro style look. And when you're installing it, you get a few different custom design features so you can customize your Microsoft Office and make it look a bit different. So color schemes. So being honest with you, I just chose nothing because to me, it doesn't matter. I just want it to work. I used to be one of these people who I would be installing every single little application operating system and I would be making sure that everything is aesthetically pleasing. But now anymore, I want it just to work.
Mm. Now, you know? I'm looking at this. They've gone with a very simplistic design.
Yes.
And what's interesting is I was on 2010 and I wanted to print. And I went on to the print page and I was going around, had it all set up. How do I print? looking for the button, going all over the screen, and then I looked at the top left-hand corner and there's a little image, tiny little image, and that said print. And I hovered over it and that was the button.
Yeah, it was difficult to get used to, for people who are used to Word 2003, to get used to that ribbon design that was introduced in 2007. Mm-hmm. And
I found it quite hard.
Yeah. It's more about functionality for us, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still on 2007, I haven't upgraded to 2010. Yeah.
Same here.
And
I'm on 2011, but for the Mac version 2011, because there was a year.
So they haven't actually announced a Mac version, but they're saying that they're working on a Mac version.
Yeah,
and
I wouldn't get the Mac version. It'd probably just be
the same.
The biggest waste of €70 in your life.
Yeah. Now there are absolutely loads of new features, but I'm just going to give you the overview, a very brief overview. So one of the big things about this is by default, all your files are saved to SkyDrive, which is Microsoft's Drive cloud service, which I used to use for a little while, and then I just started using Google Docs because everybody else uses Google Docs. And you have to have a Microsoft ID and whatever, which
I can already see problems spiking up here, but go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. And they're pushing Office 365, which is also something that I used, which is the Office suite in the cloud. Now, it's a limited version of Office. Yeah. So you can't do all the Office features. And after a while, I just stopped. But they're saying that they've improved it for the new UI. Mm-hmm. And they have, you know, made it mobile browser friendly, which is nice. So, Kevin, what problems can you see cropping up straight away?
Now, with more elderly people, just taking them into consideration.
Yeah.
Let's say they have, like, you have to have a Microsoft account, like, is it Windows Live, automatically have it on SkyDrive.
You have to have a Microsoft account to use Office, the new Office.
Okay.
To sign in. So so here I have on my desktop right here, I have my Windows, it's a downloaded version of Microsoft Office. And I still have to sign in into my account.
Now, what's interesting about that is more elderly people, they might have to get help with setting up their Windows Live account because it's not as simple as just downloading Microsoft Office. So that's the first thing. And the second thing
I'm definitely not getting it then.
Mm-hmm. Well, the second thing is that you have to... it automatically saves it to SkyDrive. And what's interesting about that is you're going to have to go to SkyDrive. They might know what SkyDrive is, and then you have to get your documents from there. And then if you want to change it to something else, then you're going to have to go into all the settings and then look around there, change it to whatever you want, and then
it gets complicated.
Then it's there. Yeah. So,
and for an elderly person like my mom, it's just
Or God. For anyone, anyone that's difficult.
Yeah.
You know, that is
yeah, and like my mom can hardly. I need touch screen. Well, in all fairness, she hasn't been really around computers a lot, and her first interaction with one was only around 5 years ago.
Oh yeah.
And she's learning a bit, but it's still a pain to.
Yeah, well, that's
whenever
because
how do I close this document now? And she, whenever I touch the computer, she goes like, no! Because she's afraid that I'll blow it up or something.
Well, again, you have to remember that, like, they haven't grown up with computers.
I know. I said that earlier.
Oh, yeah. But it's interesting how more elderly people, like, they've had more experience. Some of them have had more experience because they've had, like,
they adopted it earlier.
Yeah, because, like, computers came out way before we were born. But, you see, we grew up with it. So we're, you know, we can...
We're digital natives.
Yeah, so it's interesting how that works. But, yeah, again, Microsoft Word, you know, how it's supposed to be simplistic, and the new Windows 8 team, or new Windows 8 operating system, so...
Yeah. So... I've been messing around with Windows 8, and Windows 8 is the same way as Office was. For example, I'm trying to get back to my... Ah, there it goes. I was trying to get back to my little home screen right here with all the Metro interface. And I installed Windows 8 this morning, and I was like, yes, I'm ready to go. First thing I did, I clicked on the videos... application just to see what Metro looked like, and there was no button to go back. I didn't know how to go back.
Is it a gesture or?
It's not a gesture. What you have to do is let me actually show you. This is a bit cropped, this image, so you won't be able to see this probably.
Press the start button on the keyboard like a physical start.
No,
button.
No.
Windows button.
That didn't work.
No.
Escape.
Oh.
No. You have to go into the bottom left corner and hover over it to get... And then this little start thing pops up and you click on that. And that'll bring you back to the little menu.
Are you actually Metro kidding
menu.
Me?
No.
That's very intuitive, is it?
Wow. It's a bit flaky. Like, a lot of the time it won't work. I'm trying to do it now.
So there's not an actual physical button there that you can see.
There's no button you can see.
So you literally have to use one of those things that might.
Wow.
Why did Microsoft even do it? It's just not intuitive. It's
like,
not
simple. If you had like it's a just little not, page curl or something.
You should be able to instantly know how to use it.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
Like. Okay, to get back. Oh, I just clicked the back one. Oh, I'm back.
I'm trying. Oh, there it goes. Okay,
and
I've
even,
got it. Now I've got it.
And
instead of getting stuck in the videos application, trying to watching
yeah,
Spider-Man.
And I don't want
to get out of it.
And I don't want to be negative about Windows 8, but
yeah.
It's such a big issue. I mean, it took me a minute there just to try and get back to the homepage.
And again, it's more about functionality, not how nice it looks and design.
Yeah.
You know, but what I was about to say is people associate different colors to different things and different shapes to different things. Like an X would be to go back or to close something, and red would be to go back, and green would be go or to start something, and then like amber would be like to minimize something. Or something in between, like just the lights on a like for cars and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like if people see green as go, red as stop, and amber to put your foot to the floor.
yeah. So anyway. Back to the features of the new Microsoft Office. So they were pushing, as
Put
I was saying, they were pushing Office 365. And it's also the new version of Office. Good man, Kev. is actually, believe it or not, touch friendly. So
that
basically means that if you're using a tablet, you're
yeah.
able to.
Okay.
Yeah, which is nice. A nice feature to have rather than before in Windows 7 for tablets where you had to use Microsoft.
Well, Windows 8 for tablets is actually pretty decent. I like Windows 8 on the tablet.
Yeah, it's nice on tablet.
It works really well on tablet. Mm-hmm. Laptop, if you have multi-touch trackpad, it's fine.
Yeah, no,
and
I've had...
on a desktop is just...
Oh, I'm trying to get this thing.
Now, wait, if you're supposed to hover over this corner, then how are you supposed to get out of the folder on the tablet?
Yeah, I know, it's...
Are you supposed to, like, hold down on it, or...? Because that's known as clicking.
Maybe yeah. The gesture, like, the one in the iPad where you just go...
I've been messing around with this on my MacBook Pro, which has a nice big trackpad, and the multi-touch gestures kind of work. It's really juddery, but they kind of work.
Mm. Well,
and
I guess...
Being honest with you, it's not very intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit... just for a desktop operating system, it's... I mean, and people are saying, oh yeah, but you just... I mean, you've got the normal desktop. All right, let me show you what the normal desktop is. So...
It's Windows 7.
So you've got... Here is my home page.
No, it's not. It's not Arrow. It's not Arrow.
Okay, you've got your Xyloning going on there, Dara, as always. You might ring us back again. Thanks. If that's okay. Yeah, thanks. Okay, so, right, so you can't actually see, there's a Windows bar. It basically looks like Windows 7, right? And you've got your file browser that I can bring up here. I'm sorry I've gone on to Windows 8 when we were trying to do Office, but anyway. So, here's your file browser. You've got a recycle bin on your desktop. It's just a normal desktop. And then you go into the corner and this little start thing pops up. And you've got your Metro. So you're basically forced into Metro. There's no way of avoiding Metro.
Mm-hmm. Unless you just use the desktop.
So it's... And, you know, it is a beta. So obviously they're going to be working on...
And again, we were talking about Windows 8 before. But yeah, go ahead, sorry.
And... It is still a beta, and there's obviously going to be a lot of bugs that have to be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
But, I better answer this.
And even things that have to be changed, like Metro, Windows 8. We were talking about this before in one of our earlier shows,
mm-hmm.
that Windows is known for business. Mac OS is known for fun, different things, like...
It's more of a multitasker.
Yeah, and for game, well, not, you know, like fun games, like family-friendly mm-hmm. games and stuff like that. And now Windows are trying to go in the way of Apple, because Metro is designed for those types of games like Angry Birds, Jetpack Joyride, you know, just different things like that. And that's not Windows.
Yeah.
You know? And they're forcing you to use Metro. And, you know... I could not imagine that in a business. Everyone's just going to be going for Windows 7, you know.
Yeah, definitely. So, just messing around with Windows 8, to me, it's not really very good. So, okay, back to what we were doing with our Office. So, let me take up this Office thing right here. Okay, so, it's kind of cropped. Let me actually bring this in a new, I'll just bring this in so you can see the full thing, the full window, because I have this set up differently. Okay, there you go. So here is the full window of Office. And it looks pretty much the same as... what you would see in Office 2010. There aren't that many differences that way, mm-hmm. interface-wise. It's pretty much the same. Like, it looks a bit differently.
Looks and you can different. You can set themes as well. And yeah, it's not aero.
And things like that. Yeah, exactly. It's not aero, so that's kind of nice. Mm-hmm. They've scrapped aero. So so the install was very interesting for me because it was such a quick install. It's like a 5-minute install. So what it does is, so when it says it's done, it'll be working in the background, still installing the applications. Yeah. So the first application you click on, it'll actually,
it'll start installing.
It'll actually stream the stuff that you need from the servers. And then if you click on another one, then it'll say still loading or whatever.
I guess that's good.
And it's just a really snappy thing, and it works very, very well. So I'm just going to bring up PowerPoint.
I guess that's actually good for bloatware, because with bloatware, you're going to have to download all of that on top of the operating system.
Yeah.
And that's going to take a long time.
Yeah. So that gives people all the more chance to install more bloatware.
Yeah.
To install all that crap that they give you that comes up with an alert every 10 minutes saying crap.
So, yeah. So, okay, this is in PowerPoint. They have some very nice new templates. So I'm going to create an organic project. So it
organic.
It is a bit slow. I am running this in a virtual machine. So, okay, let's add a new slide. It's to me, it looks the same thing. You can add your slides and whatever. There is a mobile, a touch-friendly version that you can turn on as well. So, yeah, it's nice. I wouldn't upgrade from, because I don't see the need for. Now this is definitely aimed towards enterprise.
Yeah,
a lot more with SkyDrive, Office 365. SkyDrive.
It's contender for Dropbox, but if it works, because I don't know if SkyDrive works or not.
But with SkyDrive, you know, people might forget their document or their computer. They might have to show, or they might bring it into work, or they might have a presentation. Go into SkyDrive.
Yeah, and then the issue is, for your average user, they might know it's going to SkyDrive, and they're like, where is it on my computer? And they have to change that.
Because one Windows 8 itself is aimed. It seems to be a contender for the Apple enthusiasts, for people who aren't in enterprise. And then the Office apps are basically for the enterprise. So are people going to move up to, they'll hate the OS or
like,
and they'll get to PowerPoint?
That's actually a very good point that you made there, because what Microsoft might be trying to do is to try and bring in people from Apple, like convert people from Mac to PC.
Mm-hmm.
PC is fun, just like Mac. And you can also do enterprise on it, you know. Just things like that, you know.
Right, so now, about the versions, the different versions of Office. I have just installed the standard version, the basic version of Office. You get Excel, Publisher, Outlook, Word, PowerPoint, OneNote, and Access. You don't get Outlook.
Okay.
Okay. Which I actually used Outlook 2007. And just because I have so many email accounts, if we talk about tech and things like that, I use it, you know, to manage all my accounts, because they're custom email accounts. They're not with Gmail or...
Yeah.
So, apart from that, though, I don't really use Outlook. So that wouldn't really matter to me. I'll just stick with my Outlook 2007. Now, Kevin, if 2013 came out for Windows 7, which it is, by the way, so if it came out tomorrow, would you buy it if it was, even if it was cheap?
No. I would not buy, I would not buy it because Windows 2007 is it's good enough for me. Office 2007 is
good enough for me. It's the same for me. I just don't see any point in me upgrading. Mm-hmm.
There aren't a lot of features that I'll be using in 2013.
Exactly. I mean, they're nice features, but I'd never use them.
It's very, very cloud-based. It's just cloud.
Yeah.
Instead of your hard drive, you can save money on the hard drive by putting stuff in the cloud.
It's trying to get people to use SkyDrive, basically. Mm-hmm. Because I guess they don't have like that many. I've never actually heard of SkyDrive, believe it or not.
But moving people from, say a Dropbox universe to a SkyDrive universe would be very, very, very difficult.
Well, you see, Dropbox is completely cross-platform. You can put anything up there. Dropbox is different.
It really all depends on whether it works or not. Because Dropbox is the only one I have ever used, the only cloud-based service I've ever used that has worked 100% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
iCloud, it works one in every four, probably.
Yeah. iCloud is a topic for another day.
Mm-hmm.
We could talk about cloud for ages, pretty much.
Yeah.
And just
rant and moan about it.
Yeah. And, right. So, something very interesting we're going to talk about now is how the Google Nexus 7 tablet has been doing so well. It's completely It's completely sold out on the Play Store. They say they're completely out of stock. So this is good.
Yeah.
I mean, the Nexus 7 tablet has been getting great reviews.
Yeah.
Especially for its price.
Oh, yeah.
$200. Quad-core.
Yeah, it's a sweet price. And they're actually making a profit on it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is killing.
Yeah, it's like the Kindle.
The Kindle Fire.
They're not even making any profit on the hardware.
Right.
They're actually making all the profit on the Kindle Store, you know, and the actual apps itself, which is, it's actually very interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, also, the Kindle Fire has not a very good display, and the one on the Nexus is almost Retina. It's 215 PPI, I think.
Yeah. It's incredible. I love the Nexus 7. You know?
It's very nice. So it's been getting really, really great reviews. There's been so many people who weren't able to buy a tablet in the past buying tablets now.
Yeah.
And it's great.
But what's interesting as well, I don't really like Android tablets too much. But I like the Nexus 7 is a great example because it's a great price. And I've actually had a look at it and it's actually really, really nice, you know? An Android tablet.
Yeah.
For an Android tablet, I'd say it's head to head with the iPad, I think. But they're aimed at two different markets.
Yeah, that's true.
Because the iPad is aimed at the kind of entry level PC user who wants it as their as their main kind of computer.
Yeah. Now, interesting.
And the Nexus 7 is could it.
Interesting, you brought that up because there's been so many rumors now about an iPad Mini. So like a 7 or an 8-inch tablet where, you know, Apple are maybe going on the defense a bit because these small tablets have been doing so well. But I distinctly remember at the iPad 2 conference, Steve Jobs said, no one wants a 7-inch tablet.
Yeah.
But
so, and this is not like Apple. Apple wouldn't, this Apple style is... Apple tell you what you want.
Mm-hmm.
They don't do what a lot of other companies do, which is they go on the defensive.
Mm-hmm.
If another company makes a great, successful product, go and make one similar. Mm-hmm. And Apple come out with an iPad Mini, this is seen to me anyway as Apple going on the defensive because devices like the Kindle Fire and the Nexus 7 are just doing so well.
Mm-hmm. And again... As we said earlier, is that, Apple's style is that they do not like to say, yes, we were wrong, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we were, oh, sorry, we we were wrong. We shouldn't have said that.
Now these
so
rumors,
we are actually coming out with
now these rumors are there, and there's actually some evidence that it will come out. Now there's been rumors every single year about an iPad Mini,
but if it comes out, I'm not getting it.
Go ahead, Dara.
Well, at the iPad 2 event, Steve Jobs was alive. So, and that was his opinion, that 7-inch tablets suck.
Yeah,
they not succeed.
So, yeah.
And Steve Jobs is dead now, and I've listened to his I've listened to his biography on Audible.
Yeah.
And he said that you don't do what I'd do. Do what is best for the company. Mm-hmm. Do what's Apple, not me.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
maybe they will do a 7-inch. So.
Very good point.
Yeah, and if they do a 7-inch, it's showing that Tim Cook even.
Everyone keeps forgetting his name.
Tim Cook.
That Tim Cook is the CEO of the company, and it's his decision, not Steve Jobs, who's, you know.
Dead.
No, who's commanding the. Yeah, right? So, that's kind of interesting. So we're going to discuss a bit about an iPad Mini.
Mm-hmm.
Dara, if there was an iPad Mini, okay, first of all, if an iPad Mini came out, 7 or 8-inch tablet, it's obviously going to be at a premium.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to, so it's going to be more expensive. It's obviously going to be more expensive than a Nexus 7 tablet. Right, so it's my opinion probably $350.
$300.
I would not buy it.
You wouldn't buy it if it was $350.
Because I prefer on a 7-inch tablet. I just like Android on it. I like Android in 7-inch.
It suits the 7-inch form factor a lot more.
Yeah, and it depends what they do with iOS as well, because iOS in a 7-inch,
have
to modify it, and everyone's apps would be, would it be a 7-inch iPod Touch or a 7-inch, see, it's that very grey area
It also depends on the specs. If it's a 7-inch, if it's the iPad 3, with the 7-inch screen instead of the 10-inch screen, all the features are still there, the great camera, fast processors, and it's €350, then I would definitely go for the smaller tablet.
Because it's cheaper.
It's cheaper.
But if it's it's basically a Kindle Fire hacked to run iOS, then meh.
Yeah, if the specs aren't as good as the iPad, the 10-inch iPad, then...
Yeah.
But I just don't see a point in buying the 10-inch iPad if the 7 or 8-inch iPad is cheaper and has pretty much all the same features except for the screen.
No, as Dara was saying,
the Nexus 7 is it's a ROG Integra 3, so, and it's got 12 core graphics.
Yeah,
and as Dara
it's beating the iPad.
As Dara was saying about the apps, how they'd have to completely redesign them. Well, you have to remember when the iPad came out. Everyone was like, "Oh no, there's no apps for the iPad gonna be out," and then. In the first week, there was about a quarter of the apps from the iPhone market had actually been optimized for the iPad.
Right.
You know? And there had actually been quite a few apps that had been specially made just for the iPad, not for the iPhone. And that's very interesting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But I would definitely...
Do you ultimately think that the number of apps specially designed for the iPad will actually, it would be better than the amount of apps designed only for the iPhone?
Maybe not, because it hasn't been out for as long.
Yeah, it's been out for 2 years and the iPhone's been out for 5.
Right, so do you think that, Kevin, would you buy... If you were looking in the market for a new iPad, which you are, would you, and this new 7 or 8-inch tablet came out, would you go for the 10-inch or the 7-inch?
Well, I wouldn't be looking for an iPad, but if I was, I go for the 7-inch because it is cheaper and it has all the same things, except this is just a smaller screen.
Yeah.
But, well, we don't know that, but it's most likely
going to be. But you see, the thing is, they're probably going to bring down the specs because that would take dramatically from the sales of the 10-inch. Right? They're going to have some better features. So something that's better, much better, on the 10-inch iPad that'll make it worthwhile.
Like a better processor or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, faster. Right. Better camera, different things like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I still will get 7-inch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, we better leave it there for today. We're running very, very, very late. We're nearly at an hour and a half.
Yeah,
so it was great. It was great. Thank you, Dara, for being on the show. Dara Coughlin. You can find him at ThatBoredGuyIRL on Twitter.
Yeah, right? I am forever bored.
Yeah. And if you want to see some tweets from That Bored Guy.
Mm-hmm. He does actually tweet a lot. Yeah.
So
I did a few retweets today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So thank you, Dara, for being on the show. Great having you on.
And also
to discuss. We went well over time. Yeah. We had some great discussions.
And also thank you for supporting Talks About Tech for such a long time.
Yes.
Especially on the live streams and on Twitter itself and all that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kevin,
thank you
for being here as always. We'll miss you next week, Kevin McAndrew. You can't contact him at all. He doesn't have.
Oh, does. Yes.
I have to start putting up your Twitter. Space News Today is where you can find Kevin on Twitter.
Yeah.
And Kevin, you have started a new website called Space News Today, which is a space podcast network.
Mm-hmm.
So you're starting off with the Space News Today podcast.
Yeah. And
starting tomorrow?
Yes.
Okay.
Monday.
What time? Every Monday, what time?
I won't be live streaming regularly at start, but I don't have that actually planned out yet.
So you don't know what time tomorrow.
Yeah. Okay. I probably won't.
You'll have to figure it out.
I'll kind of get into live stream as it progresses.
Oh, so you won't be live streaming?
No, I will.
Yeah, yeah. Do live stream.
I'll be making it better quality and all that as it progresses. So if you want to see anything space, and there's even technology things in there, like new technologies. Do you know that there is actually a worm and it's very interesting that reacts,
save it for tomorrow.
Don't spoil it. Yeah, I want to watch that live.
Yeah, it's gonna be great.
There's better things, and then more technologies can actually come out of that. So
I'm really looking forward to this show.
It's the aerospace industry is a growing industry.
So it's actually just space, like organizations. If you like politics and stuff, well, I'll be doing a little bit of that, but mostly like aerospace, aeronautics,
right?
Astronomy.
So this is going to be hosted on the Talks About Tech network, but it is part of Kevin's network.
Yeah.
So it'll be up for podcast on Kevin's website, but it will be live streamed on my website and Kevin's website tomorrow. And so you can tune in on either website.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be using the Talks About Tech chat, though.
Yeah.
But that'll be embedded in Kevin's website as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Should it be on another channel called hashtag Space News Today or something instead of hashtag Talks About Tech?
You see, the thing is, it's all hosted using the Talks About Tech network because we have everything set up here. We have a studio and we might as well avail of it.
Yeah, right? It's great to have this studio because it is an amazing studio with these mics, a great mixer. You know, Michael's put a lot of effort into it. You know, it is actually incredible because we get great audio and actually great quality for the internet speeds and all that we have.
What?
I mean, the quality is very good for.
We're actually running on 200 kilobit live stream.
That's correct.
That is our upload speed. And to get that good quality. Yeah, and to get that good quality.
It took a lot of setup. It took a lot of setup, I must say. But it's down to the mixing software that I'm using for the video. And of course, this beautiful Behringer mixer.
Mm-hmm. It's an amazing mixer.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm going to do a video.
And the time and effort.
I'm going to do a video with a tour of the studio and how everything works.
Yeah, but you basically, should, because it's amazing.
Basically, if people have been always wondering how I can switch between a camera with Kevin, a camera with me, a camera with Dara, you know, on Skype.
Just so easily.
So easily.
Well, going back to that upload speed debate, I'm on a 400 kilobits upload speed, and I look quite, but I look worse than it.
Yeah, that's because Skype does this variable thing.
Yeah, it does very bad compression.
Right, it's not great. So, but anyway, we shouldn't be complaining about a free product.
Still, because it is a great service.
So, it still looks quite bad.
Yeah, so what I use for my podcast is a piece of software called XSplit Broadcaster. Mm-hmm. And that allows me to switch. I can put on the lower third right here. Mm-hmm. I can take that off. I can switch between Kevin. I can do double shots even. I can switch to Dara here on Skype on another computer remotely. I'm doing that. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty nice.
And now what you should do is, because I'm going to be away next week, what you should do is you should do a whole kind of tour of the studio next week instead of Talks About Tech.
So, well, I'll do Talks About Tech as well.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure I'll be able to get a guest. Maybe Dara, you might come on again. We'll
definitely.
See. We'll see.
From live from America. Live from Washington, D.C.
Yeah. Maybe.
I'll be joining you at around 2 o'clock local time.
Yeah, that could be a problem. So, I think...
I'd probably be available.
I'll be able to get another ghost or guest on.
I'd definitely be inside with the air conditioning on for the blast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, thank you guys for joining this show, and you can follow me on Twitter at Talks About Tech, and Google Plus, just Michael McAndrew, Google Plus. So, all right, thank you for watching or listening to this episode of Talks About Tech Weekly, and until next time.
You can also follow me on Google Plus.
Yeah, you can follow Darren on Google Plus as well. Okay.
I just had to say that.
Okay, goodbye.
You never mentioned my Google Plus.
All right. We're running well over time. Thank you for watching or listening to this episode of Talks About Tech.
Bye-bye.
Bye.